Boston Mayor Marty Walsh announced this afternoon that he's holding the city's reopening at Phase 2, Step 2 for 3 more weeks. Now, that is alongside a statewide infection rate above 8% and with only about 40% of the Commonwealth's vaccine doses administered. So are we prepared for a full vaccine rollout in the coming months? And do you know how to stay safe in the meantime? We are going to start today by taking your coronavirus and vaccine questions. The number to call is 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, joining us to take questions is Dr. Michael Collins, a Senior Vice President for Health Sciences for the University of Massachusetts System. He's also Chancellor of the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, an infectious disease physician and acting hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center, also an assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Drs. Collins and Pierre, welcome.
Wonderful to be here.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you both. So Dr. Collins, I'm going to start with you because you recently co-authored an op-ed in The Globe with UMass President Marty Meehan advocating for essentially a vaccine corps, a national COVID-19 vaccine corps of college students to help with the rollout. What's the problem you're trying to solve with that recommendation?
Well, it's the reality yet to come, Tiziana, which is that once we have vaccinated healthcare workers and institutionalized populations, patients in nursing homes and et cetera, there's going to be a need to vaccinate the general population. And that's going to require person power like we haven't seen before. The ability for us to deliver vaccinations into the arms of, you know, literally hundreds of millions of people is going to take a core. And if you see some of the pictures on TV or listen to some of the stories on the radio, you recognize that in some places in the country where this has begun, it's been a bit challenging. In Massachusetts here, I think there's been a very thoughtful process of let's get the healthcare workers vaccinated first, and then we'll move into the nursing home population. We'll get to the general population in a bit. Take that thoughtful approach and now plan to do a much larger number of people. It seems to me we're going to need a core. Match that up with the fact that a number of students have decided to take gap years or are going to school virtually. And I've heard from many of them say, geez, I wish there was something that I could do to contribute. And this might be a way for folks to contribute. Not to mention that healthcare workers are quite tired, and to burden them with this responsibility may not be the best way to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible.
So just briefly, and then I want to turn to Dr. Pierre, it sounds like this with this kind of idea, college students are one type of available labor, but we also have 10 million unemployed Americans in the country right now. Could this be a short-term jobs program as well?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Excellent. Well, okay, so Dr. Pierre, I do want to turn to you. One of the things that Dr. Collins was just talking about was the need to scale up vaccination after we get through phase one. And you know, and he mentioned that there's been some criticism, although Massachusetts seems to be relatively well off, that the rollout is happening slowly. Are we on par with what you would expect here in the Commonwealth? And if not, why? Or if so, why do you think we're getting it right?
It's a great question. I think that it's easier for me to talk in the realm of my own experience, but I know other healthcare institutions are very similar in this approach. Many have been involved on multiple calls across multiple platforms, speaking to each other. This pandemic has really brought many healthcare institutions together, speaking the same language in the same meetings, trying to collaborate and partner rather than seeing each other's as competitors. And so there's a lot of conversation about how to center equity, how to think about vaccine allocation, and how to message and how to communicate, how to rely on our community partners, even while focusing first on the first wave of people to vaccinate, as you mentioned, the healthcare workers and those in long-term care facilities. And so I think that while we always wish we were further ahead than we are, I think that we have been in a really good position. We've been vaccinating a huge amount of healthcare workers. We have systems that have been set up to ensure, and we've been anticipating this for a number of months, so we've been setting up our systems for healthcare workers, doing education, understanding that not only is it important to vaccinate our healthcare workers for their own safety, for the safety of the community and for our patients, but because they also will serve as unofficial ambassadors to our patients and show that we value this so much, we believe in this so much, that we are willing to all get this done to protect ourselves. So I think that we're in a good position, but I've noticed in the past few days that the numbers have started to trail off, whether it be because of vaccine supply or because individuals are we've started to reach a wave of individuals who may not be as comfortable taking the vaccine.
So we have opened the phones, and I'm going to turn to them. We'll have calls on both the vaccine, but also just on the coronavirus in general. And I think I'll start with a couple of questions there. 800-423-8255. We've got Dave on the line from West Roxbury. Dave, go ahead. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Well, first of all, on the vaccination, just real quick, I don't think we were prepared enough. I mean, why aren't we mass vaccinating people over 75 right now? Why is it that we haven't really even started? It's been 3 or 4 weeks now. I know the holidays were in the way, but we should be vaccinated at night, during the weekends, all the 24 hours we should be vaccinating the people most at risk. And then once that happens and death starts trailing off, then things will look a lot better. But until we do that, and anyways, we just didn't seem prepared for it. What I really wanted to say was, Marty now is such a city down again for 3 more weeks because the first 3 weeks didn't work either. We seem to be doubling down on the message that doesn't seem to be resonating with a lot of people. And I think they need to change the way they're doing things. One of the problems is there's nothing for people to do. Everything is closed. And because of that, they're getting together with their family and friends. And maybe, you know, the Museum of Fine Arts was a super spreader. I mean, if they allow
Dave, let me take it back.
Things,
yeah, thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. And 2 points there. I'm going to start with the first one, Dr. Collins, on vaccination. Now, just to Dave's point, Governor Charlie Baker did move people over the age 75 and older up in the vaccine prioritization yesterday. So they are still not phase one, but they are moved up in phase two. So just to clarify that, but are you feeling like we've got our priorities straight and are rolling out where we need to in a targeted way, Dr. Collins?
Well, I think that the priorities are very well established. The group that the governor put together to think through how you know, what groups would be organized and when. I think that's all been very, very thoughtfully considered. I think that everyone is going to, you know, want this to be done yesterday. So I think I can appreciate the frustration of wanting to get vaccinations into more arms as quickly as possible. We have to recognize that the supply is limited. It's a big country. States have been allocated certain amounts of vaccine, and they're working now to work through those vaccines into people's arms. I think the bigger challenge, to Dave's point, is that when we get to the general population, there's going to be hundreds of millions of people, and we're clearly going to need systems that can accommodate that that increased need.
And Dr. Collins, have you gotten any response from the state to yours and Marty Meehan's proposal for this vaccine corps?
We're in some conversations with them. And we have a bit of a pilot already working with one of our entities at the medical school. And the question is whether we can expand on that. And we're going to be having conversations very shortly with them about that.
So, Dr. Pierre, let's turn then to the other part of Dave's question, which was, if I'm reading him correctly, frustration that we are shutting down formal venues for another 3 weeks in the city of Boston, at least, when the spread, to the best that our data tells us, when the spread is coming from private gatherings. What is your reaction to that overall? And do we need some kind of other message?
Yeah, I know. I think it's definitely an excellent point. We know that there's a lot of household indoor gathering spread. A lot of that spread prior to the rollback was happening in establishments. You know, there were lots of outbreaks in restaurants and other indoor venues and businesses. Although I agree with him, it may be not the ones that have been rolled back. I think it's important to send a message, and the city has tried to do that with trying to limit the amount of people who are at indoor gatherings. But, you know, we continue to see people at indoor gatherings. I continue to see things that really surprise me, a party bus rolling down the highway. And so I think that, to his point, I think that perhaps there does need to be a little bit of messaging about what some alternatives might be. A few months ago, many people were advocating for the city to set up some kind of winter activities that encourage social distancing, or basically something else to take people's minds off of feeling cooped up. I think that, you know, it's certainly something to be investigated, but I also think that some of those venues that even seem to be lesser risk are also places where you may be unnecessarily venturing out to have spread, given the higher level of asymptomatic infection in the community. So even those places that we previously viewed as benign may pose unnecessary risk for exposure, infection, and disease.
Before I go back to the phones, and I will, 800-423-8255 is the number to call with your coronavirus or vaccine questions. There have been some discussions about vaccine supplies, and I want to ask the two of you kind of a compound question. We have right now more doses on hand than we are able to distribute. We know that because we know that roughly 40% of the Commonwealth's current supply has been distributed. We also know that there are some questions being floated and some research being done about, for example, delivering a half dose of the Moderna vaccine instead of a full dose, giving more people single doses and delaying on giving a second dose in order to roll it out more quickly. Is that the rate limiting factor? Is it that we need to reduce the dosage to get more out to people, or do we have some cogs in the distribution system that if we can get fixed, we can give the vaccine as originally intended and not either have a surplus or have to sort of scrimp? Does my question make sense?
It does. I would be very cautious about changing the manner in which we distribute the vaccine. The studies have been done on two dose administrations of the vaccine. We are trying to get folks to be confident that the vaccines are safe and effective. And now would not, in my opinion, now would not be the time to be the change, the route of administration or the practice of doing vaccine administration. What we need to do is produce vaccine and distribute vaccine. Now, I think the good news to the point that the caller raised, the way I'm looking at it is, it's not like it was last March. It's this January. So I think we have to look at the future and say, if we just can get through another month or two, get large numbers of people vaccinated, then we'll be in a position where we can start to approach some more normalcy. And so it's not like it was at the beginning of this. We're sort of at the end of it. And I'm quite hopeful about that future. But now is not the time to, I think we have to stick by our leaders who are saying, look, it's just, while the environment of a museum may be fine, you've got to get to the museum, you've got to get back from the museum, maybe you choose to have something to eat while you're out. None of those venues are very safe. While it might be fine around the museum, it's the going and the coming that's some of the issues. So I can clearly understand why folks are suggesting we not be out and about. Not to mention that we're starting to approach large capacity, you know, full hospitals. And over the next few weeks, those are likely to get even more full. So we've got to get ourselves to a position where we're on the other side of this. And we're clearly not there yet, which is why folks are saying a short time more, and then we can get back to some sense of normalcy.
And to your point, I do want to note that the last time we had Boston Mayor Marty Walsh on the air just before Christmas, he also argued it's not that the spread is unique to these types of venues, but when the concentrations in the community are this high, you do right. Whatever you can to limit exposure. So Dr. Sure. Pierre, we you know, to Dr. Collins's point, we need to get through the next few months until we reach high levels of vaccination. I saw some new reporting this week about a Boston study that's looking into the effects of vitamin D on severity of COVID-19 symptoms. And that's something we've had calls on in the past. So what do we know about the impact of something like vitamin D and other treatments that could or might, or that we are investigating whether they will reduce the severity of the illness until people can get vaccinated?
So it's not going to be a magic bullet. Vitamin D has been studied for both decreasing the severity of COVID-19 disease as well as has been looked at extensively in prevention as well. Prevention of COVID-19, there is some data to show that vitamin D supplementation might decrease the risk of having COVID-19. But I would just caution people, although, you know, people are looking at this, vitamin D has been proposed as a medication that might prevent and lessen severity for numerous types of infections based on its association with immune cell production. It is not something that is going to be most likely the difference between, from what we can tell, between you staying at home with COVID and going to the hospital or potentially even being intubated. So there's definitely more information to come. But from the data that we have, using our infection prevention techniques, the mask, the physical distancing, washing hands, the things that we're so sick of saying, and then on top of that, getting vaccinated, really are the best ways for us to stay safe. So I certainly don't want to discourage people from taking vitamin D, from doing the things that are safe and potentially protective. But I also want us to understand that we actually do have data that the vaccine is safe and effective. And if we can do the things that we need to do to reduce our exposure to infection before we are eligible to get it, then that will be so much more worth it.
So let's go back to the phones. We've got Nicole on the line from Worcester. Nicole, what's your question?
So hospitals and nursing homes, they have a big organization and a plan in place for vaccinating their staff and their patients. But what about for healthcare workers that are not a part of a giant organization like that, private practice people, therapists, chiropractors, things like that?
Okay, thanks for that question, Nicole. I'm going to grab one more question, then we'll go back to both doctors. We've got James on the line from Woburn. James, go ahead.
Hello, Vice President of UMass. I actually go to one of the UMass campuses. I am a neurodivergent individual who suffers from schizophrenic delusions in life, and I cannot take this vaccine because it will destroy my mental health. I have many delusions about this vaccine, and I'm very afraid. So, as the Vice President, how will you take care of those suffering from mental illness and those who are neurodivergent at the UMass system? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for your call, James. Dr. Collins, do you want to address James's question first?
Well, it's obviously a challenging question. I don't like to practice medicine on an interview, so I think it wouldn't be appropriate for me, not really understanding fully his own medical situation, to comment on that. I will say that there may be some very limited reasons why folks don't take the vaccine. But remember that if we can get a combination of 80% of the population, 70 or 80% of the population who have either had the disease or get the vaccine, that will get us to what is called herd immunity. And that will help us to end the pandemic. And that needs to be our goal. There are very, very large number of mental health services available within the University of Massachusetts system. And I'm sure that the caller could access those if appropriate.
Thanks for that, Dr. Collins. And Dr. Pierre, the question about those who are in, let's say, private practice or home-based healthcare workers, I will say that I'm looking at the phases chart right now, and home-based healthcare workers and healthcare workers doing non-COVID-facing care are in the bottom of phase one. So they are targeted, but I think Nicole was asking about a plan as well. Are you aware of the plan for distribution to non-hospital-based healthcare workers?
In a limited fashion, and this question really spoke to me because my mother is a podiatrist in Arizona who is in private practice. So we've been trying to troubleshoot where she can get her vaccine because she meets a number of criteria, including being a medical health professional. But the state has recently discussed or announced the opening of 62 mass vaccination sites in Massachusetts for first responders, which presumably would also include those who are not don't have responsibility taken up by their own proprietary healthcare institutions. I would also say the medical associations that people are affiliated with within Massachusetts might be the first place to turn to. That's what we did for my mother, to figure out where they might go to partner with a healthcare facility that may have some additional doses that they can provide for that healthcare provider. But I believe that there are probably a number of mechanisms and the proprietary medical association might be able to help. So Mass Medical Association in our case, but potentially if not, then one of those mass vaccination sites for frontline workers that will be that have been announced.
All right, that is very helpful. And we are at the end of our time. Dr. Cassandra Pierre is an infectious disease physician and acting hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center. And Dr. Michael Collins is chancellor of the University of Massachusetts Medical School. You were both generous with your time and your guidance today. Thanks to both of you.
Nice to be with
you. Wonderful to be here.